You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I cover the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago, and I cover the NFL for Pro Football Focus. Locked On Bears is your podcast destination for daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. And today, we're doing a Week 2 roundup. We'll touch on the emergence of Patrick Mahomes and kind of go into the comparisons to Mitchell Trubisky that seemed to pick up steam on Sunday. We will catch up on the latest in the NFC North, now 2 weeks into the season, to try and get a feel for where the Bears stand heading into Monday Night Football. And finally, we'll go back to the Cameron Meredith decision here because he still has yet to play for the New Orleans Saints. And I'll tell you why that doesn't mean the Bears have made the right decision just yet. Let's start with the rest of the division here through 2 weeks, because we've talked on this podcast before about how the NFC North might be the best division in the NFL this year. Certainly they were on paper as we entered the season, and the Detroit Lions are doing their best to kind of refute that notion through 2 weeks here, and we'll get to them in a second. But I think we got to start with the Packers and the Vikings. They faced off head-to-head, second straight divisional game for Green Bay after whoever they played in week one. And the Packers and Vikings, if you missed it, played to a 29-29 tie. And I watched most of that game, and it was an interesting kind of back and forth. That for a lot of it, the Vikings felt like they were playing better than the Packers, and eventually they pulled ahead a little bit, and then Green Bay kind of pulled ahead, and Minnesota pulled off a little bit of a comeback to send it in overtime. But it was kind of an interesting game, ugly at times. You know, the Vikings, I think, missed 3 field goals, which all of which could have made the difference in the game. And then down the stretch, the Packers had an interception, but Clay Matthews was flagged for roughing the passer, and it brought it back. And, you know, Packers fans and Packers players and Packers nation in general has been, you know, taking the referees out back with the shotgun and just criticizing everything about the way that game was called. But ultimately, it was a tie, and doesn't come down to one player, one flag. So, you know, you're seeing a hobbled Aaron Rodgers, certainly, with that injury caused in the Bears game. But I don't necessarily like this idea that he's playing on one leg, because we're seeing Aaron Rodgers clearly having more than one leg. He's not 100%, and I don't mean to, I guess, minimize or overlook how incredible it is that he's still playing at such a high level. But I mean, he still is able to scramble. He scrambled for a 5 or 6 yard run at one point up the middle. Like, it's not as though he is truly immobile. He's not able to take snaps under center, and he's not throwing with the same mechanics. And that's incredibly impressive. And I don't mean to completely, again, overlook that, but just, he's still Aaron Rodgers. He's still probably the best quarterback in the NFL. And he's really continuing to find ways to play well, despite being hobbled. But I don't think it's as bad as playing truly on one leg. It's maybe 1.5 out of 2 legs. How about that? But, you know, what makes it more impressive is the Packers still don't have much of a running game. They haven't been able to really get it going, and Rodgers can still kind of sling it. And you know, defensively in that game, I thought their front 7 kind of found some success against what is a bad Minnesota Vikings offensive line. But, you know, again, it goes into overtime, and the Packers defense, I thought, was pretty vulnerable, particularly in the secondary. I mean, Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs of the Vikings are 2 of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and, I mean, they were downright torching this Packers secondary at some points in the game. And, you know, Rodgers found some space versus the Vikings defensive backs down the stretch, and, you know, they've had a couple injuries, or I guess it was a surprise retirement from Terrence Newman in the slot. So, you know, there's been some changes there, and there's clearly some vulnerability on both of these teams. I mean, the fact that the Bears went up 20-0 on the Packers, and then the Packers proceed to tie the Vikings, kind of tells you that, you know, those two teams are pretty close, and the Bears were fairly close to the Vikings. So, you know, despite them both being tied for first place in the division, there's certainly some wiggle room there You know, Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers are playing well, and they have some weapons for their quarterbacks and stuff, but, you know, there's some vulnerability on those teams, and I think that is a good sign for the Bears. It's a long season, and I don't think they are miles behind the top of the NFC North, as potentially we might have thought, at least on paper, coming into the season, especially when compared to these Detroit Lions. It has been a pretty bad start for Matt Patricia and the Matt Patricia era. I think they were looking for that sort of new head coach bump, that they were a 9-7 team. You get a new guy in, a defensive-minded coach who can maybe fix things up on that side of the ball and take them from 9-7 last year to double-digit wins and maybe a playoff push. But now they're 0-2, and that defense especially looks horrendous. And in defense of Matt Patricia, I will say that on paper, you just look at the roster and the overall defensive talent, and boy, he really isn't working with much there. And I think maybe the Lions were overachieving previously, and they're still going to need a pretty significant talent increase. I mean, they're walking with Kerry Hyder, Ricky Jean Francois, and Sylvester Williams rocking that defensive line early on to start. And, you know, Devon Kennard, Jarrod Davis, and former Bear Christian Jones at linebacker. I mean, none of these guys, you know, the casual fan will have heard of none of them except maybe Ziggy Ansah, and he hasn't been that great. Secondary has Darius Slay and Glover Quinn, but the other guys, you know, their other cornerback, Nevin Lawson, although it's been Tease Tabor, and then in the slot they've had some issues, and Quandre Diggs, that are their safety, has been struggling. I mean, it has been rough for this Lions defense, and they pretty well clearly look like the fourth best team in the NFC North. You know, Stafford's been pretty good, but when he's not perfect, sometimes it's tough for them. You know, they have weapons, but the offensive line is still a work in progress. The running game is getting better, and it's a messy Lions team that's really not playing all that well, and I wonder how much a talent deficit is holding them back there. But it does kind of leave the Bears, I think they should be feeling pretty good here and somewhat in control of their own destiny heading into week two and moving forward. And as we here on Locked On Bears head into week two and move forward, I know, you know, you start watching these games and you just kind of wish, man, I wish I could be at Soldier Field and get to take in the Matt Nagy experience in person. Well, the way to do it is with Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets on not only Bears games, but all the live events you want to go to. You know, of course, you can sort by price, but you can also just kind of pick the section or the row, and wherever you want to sit at Soldier Field, Vivid Seats can find you tickets in that area, and they're going to give you a great price, especially because you are a Locked On Bears listener. Vivid Seats will give you $20 off your purchase of $200 or more, and I'm looking right now at tickets for Bears Seahawks still. Monday night, they start at $125 a piece, so a pair of those will already put you up enough to get $20 off. Or if you're looking ahead to the next Bears home game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a noon game on September 30th, tickets starting at $115 a piece. So all you got to do is get more than one, and we'll get you $20 off your purchase order. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON when you sign up. Again, go to the App Store, go to Google Play, whatever phone you have, download the Vivid Seats app and use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off of your order of $200 or more. So we're rounding up week two of the NFL today on Locked On Bears, and the popular discussion and discourse this weekend surrounded Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, who had another impressive performance as he and the Chiefs pretty well took apart the Pittsburgh Steelers. And now Patrick Mahomes has 10 touchdown passes through his first two games of the season, which is an NFL record, actually. And he's been pretty phenomenal and hard to stop in this Chiefs offense. So, of course, people are immediately saying, well, you know, is Patrick Mahomes better than Mitch Trubisky? Did the Bears draft the wrong quarterback? Look at all that. Is, you know, what's going on here? Did the Bears get the wrong guy, et cetera, et cetera? And listen, I think it's fair to compare these two to some extent. You know, they come from the same draft, and now they are playing in the same offense. So I get it in some degree. But they have different weapons. you know, they're on different teams. They're in very different situations, and certainly they have pretty different skill sets. I mean, we knew in that 2017 draft, Patrick Mahomes probably had the highest upside of any of the quarterbacks. I mean, he made some wow throws and some wow plays at Texas Tech that really got you excited. But he also made some pretty bad throws, some questionable interceptions, some inaccuracies, and a little bit too quick to flee the pocket. And there were some real weaknesses there. So certainly he was a riskier pick. And, you know, now you look at where they are right now, I think Mahomes has the better weapons. You talk about a proven 1,000-yard tight end in Travis Kelce, a 1,000-yard receiver in Tyreek Hill, a proven 1,000-yard receiver. You add Sammy Watkins in there as a dynamic number three threat, and then Kareem Hunt in the backfield as a receiving weapon and a pretty solid runner. I mean, nothing against Jordan Howard and, you know, Allen Robinson and Trey Burton. They have a lot of potential, but as far as proven weapons, Patrick Mahomes, I think, is sitting in a better offense right now. And, you know, that offense is pretty well tuned for quarterback success. I mean, last year, Alex Smith led the NFL in passer rating. So it's not as though, you know, you could plug a lot of quarterbacks in there and still have a lot of success. So, I mean, there's a lot of things going in Mahomes' favor here that Trubisky doesn't have, or that he doesn't have an equal amount here. And really, we're talking about one game of Mitchell Trubisky so far that we've seen this season. And we got two from Patrick Mahomes because Trubisky hasn't played week two as of the time of this recording. And I don't think we would have heard anyone complaining in the first half last week against the Packers. I mean, the Bears were moving the ball pretty effectively, and Trubisky looked confident and was running the offense effectively. I mean, I know the second half was bad, and he kind of regressed a little bit as a quarterback, but that's kind of the model of quarterback development. And I want to turn to friend of the show, Mark Schofield, who you've heard talk quarterbacks. We'll probably talk with him this week again about Trubisky, depending on how the performance goes. But I want to go back to a conversation he and I had on this podcast last season, right around week five, when Trubisky took over as the starting quarterback. Mark came on, and we kind of talked about the philosophy of quarterback development, and I want to play for you just a little segment from our interview back then to kind of refresh your memory a little bit. He wrote an article called "The Grass is Not Always Greener and Development is Not Linear," kind of talking about how quarterbacks don't always just keep getting better and better and better and better, that there's going to be a lot of ups and downs. So when you hear Mark talking here about quarterback development, think about it not only in terms of Mitch Trubisky, but also in terms of Patrick Mahomes. He's kind of going to talk generally about the quarterback position and make a pretty reasonable comparison that I think really fits what's going on with Patrick Mahomes right now. And we'll kind of touch on that after we hear from Mark here from last year on Locked On Bears.
You know, and I think, you know, in terms of development for quarterbacks generally, I mean, the article you mentioned, Lauren, you know, part of the reason that I wrote that was because, you know, during the last combine, the last draft process, everybody was talking about, oh, Sam Darnold, ooh, Josh Allen, ooh, forget about Deshaun Watson, forget about Deshaun Kaiser, forget about Patrick Mahomes, forget about Mitchell Trubisky. This quarterback class, whatever, next year's quarterback class is going to be great. Well, we hear that every year. It's because people assume that these guys are going to have these diagonal developmental arcs. Everybody's going to get better from year to year to year. And, oh, if this guy was great last year, just imagine how great he's going to be next year. Well, what's happened since then? And it's because we're still talking about guys that are 19, 20, 21, 22. I mean, even guys like Watson, 22. I mean, these are young kids. And think about when you were that age. I mean, I'll have to think back a long way from when I was at that age.
And I'm currently that age, so yeah, it's a little bit tough for me.
But still, I mean, you take different developmental leaps just generally as a person from year to year. I mean, some years are better than others. And then you're trying to, like, project that to that National Football League and what these guys are going to do when suddenly they're not the big man on campus anymore. I mean, Carson Wentz goes from Fargo, North Dakota. Now he's in Philadelphia. You know, he's always been the biggest, literally and figuratively speaking, guy on campus. And now he's in one of the biggest cities in the country on the East Coast with the Philadelphia media market, watching his every move and seeing where he goes to dinner. I mean, you talk about guys that are now suddenly seeing snow for the first time. And so there's so much that goes – not Carson Wentz, obviously come from North Dakota. I mean, he saw snow his entire life. But, you know what I'm saying here? I mean, you're talking about guys that are making huge life changes. And then in the midst of all that, learning a new offense and learning to be a professional football player and all the attendant circumstances that go along with it. And so there are going to be mistakes. There might even be some regression from – again, look at Wentz. Had four great games to start his NFL career, and then teams figured out what he was doing. And then we saw some regression. And then near the end of the season, we saw a little bit of an upward swing. And so there were going to be like bumps and waves and hills and valleys and things like that. But you just want to see him getting a little bit better and better and better over, say, each four-game period. Like it's – you're not going to see this line shooting up off this charts. But you just want to see him getting a little bit better over each like four-game chunk, because there are going to be some games where it might not be there, where defense is going to have him schemed up left and right. He's going to make a mistake early. You know, maybe somebody else makes a mistake and they get behind early or whatever reason, and the game script changes. So they're going to – don't look at it as a week-to-week or a drive-to-drive or a play-to-play type thing. Just take it as sort of like four-game chunks. Make sure you're seeing a little bit of development, a little bit of growth. That's kind of the way to approach it.
Again, that was Mark Schofield, host of Locked On Patriots here on the Locked On Podcast Network. That was from a conversation he and I had on this very podcast last year, around the time when Trubisky first took over as a starting quarterback. But the lessons there about quarterback development still ring true. And I can't help but think, with Patrick Mahomes' early success this season, I can't help but think about Carson Wentz and his early success. Like Mark Schofield said there, that the first four games of Carson Wentz's career, he was lighting the NFL on fire. Maybe not quite to the extent that Mahomes has with the 10 touchdowns, but a similar emergence and a wow, look at this guy. You know, the Rams got it wrong with Jared Goff, and Carson Wentz was the way to go. And then, like Mark said, the league started to figure out Wentz a little bit, and he slowed down. And I'm not saying that's going to happen to Patrick Mahomes, but I'm saying it's good to keep that perspective in mind and also think about how this quarterback development won't be linear, that Mahomes will have ups and downs even though he's having his ups now, and Trubisky will have ups and downs just like we saw last week in Green Bay. But if Trubisky continues to show the slow growth and the, you know, the positive trend overall, then you know your quarterback's on the right track. And I think he's going to be back on the right track against the Seahawks on Monday night. I apologize if you're listening to this after the Monday night game, but you're looking at a Seahawks team missing their top two linebackers, potentially missing both of their starting cornerbacks in this game. He should be fine, and I'm expecting a much better game from a course of four quarters against the Seattle Seahawks. And as the injuries have really mounted for the Seahawks later this week and through the weekend, the betting line on this game continues to favor the Chicago Bears more and more. I'm looking right now on mybookie.ag, and the Bears are up to 4.5-point favorites over the Seattle Seahawks. I believe they started at Bears by 3. It might have been 3.5 pretty quickly into the week, but it's not too late to get in on the action. If you go to mybookie.ag, they will match your first deposit dollar for dollar if you use the promo code LOCKEDON when you first sign up. There's plenty of ways to get involved beyond just the Bears spread with 4.5. I think the money line for them is -210, and the over-under for the game is set at 43. And with a banged-up Seahawks defense, you might see the Bears put up some real points here and potentially maintain what we had seen in the first half against the Green Bay Packers. They also have some prop bets for this game. Looking at, you know, you can bet on who's going to score first, which they favor the Bears. You can bet on whether somebody scores within the first 6.5 minutes, whether the first score is a touchdown, how long the longest touchdowns and field goals and total points and total sacks. I mean, there is an abundance of prop bets for this game. Again, on mybookie.ag, even who's going to score the first touchdown. The favorite right now for that is Jordan Howard, with, I believe, Allen Robinson coming right before him. So, again, if you're interested in getting in on the action, we recommend mybookie.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON, and they will match your first deposit dollar for dollar. So you'll have double the money to put down on your Bears team. And mybookie.ag, you play, you win, you get paid. Today on Locked On Bears, we're rounding up a little bit of news and notes from the NFL in week 2. And I want to wrap up with a look back at Mr. Cameron Meredith, the wide receiver of the Bears who was a restricted free agent this offseason, ultimately signs with the New Orleans Saints on a two-year, $9.5 million deal. And, of course, there was a lot of back and forth about that. We've talked about it before on this podcast, and I have stood by my opinion that it was a mistake to let him go and choose not to match that contract, especially after having only done a restricted free agent tender and not a second round tender, which was a whole different situation. But, you know, I've seen people point out that now 2 weeks into the season, Cameron Meredith has yet to play for the Saints. He's still recovering from the torn ACL and he's not ready to go. And I am not convinced that that is proof that the Bears made the right decision. I mean, okay, when you tear your ACL, it is a major injury. It is a long recovery. And I know Allen Robinson is back, but everyone's ACL injuries are different. Different players' bodies recover at different paces. And I understand that the Bears have, and the Saints have, much more medical information about this than I do. I'm not trying to be a doctor here, but I look at this from a risk-reward and a value perspective. And I still don't think it was the right decision. You know, the Bears don't need Cameron Meredith. So at the end of the day, this is not a decision that, you know, Ryan Pace should be losing sleep on, but this is, I think, a valuable contract for this type of player, and I don't think you can ever have enough playmakers, especially because Meredith was the closest thing to a proven guy that the Bears had had. I mean, sure, right now, Cameron Meredith probably comes back from this ACL injury. Whenever he does, he probably immediately slides in as wide receiver 4. As he kind of gets back closer and closer to the best he can be. And, you know, when we've seen Cameron Meredith at 100%, he might be the second best wide receiver on this Bears roster. I think he's more of a true number 2 than Taylor Gabriel is, but again, I guess we're not sure exactly where Cameron Meredith will be in terms of quality when he does get back. And it was always going to be a risky move. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But if you can get a potential number 2 wide receiver for 2 years, $9.5 million. You don't even have to pay him big bucks. The Bears still have plenty of cap space, and over 2 years, that doesn't limit your long-term ability to sign players next offseason. That's a really good deal for a number 2 wide receiver. The Bears did pay more for Taylor Gabriel, by the way, and actually, you know who else is making more money than Cameron Meredith this year? Kevin White. So, I mean, you talk about a value per dollar type of situation. I mean, Kevin White is your wide receiver 4, and he costs more than Cameron Meredith. And we're still seeing Kevin White on the field in the fourth quarter against the Green Bay Packers. I mean, I think he only played a dozen or so snaps in total, but I don't know why they're bringing him out there in those situations. I know people, you want to see Javon Wims, and I totally get that, and there's a lot of upside with Wims, and I would also probably prefer to see Wims on the offense than Kevin White, but imagine if that's Cameron Meredith. Imagine what you could do if you had Meredith and Robinson on the outside with Gabriel as your number 3 in the slot and Anthony Miller in there as well and Tariq Cohen. I mean, talk about an abundance of weapons. And at that point, it's just a value thing. It's that 2 years and $9.5 million for this potential quality of a wide receiver, a potential 800-yard guy, which Taylor Gabriel has never been. And of course, Anthony Miller being a rookie, I mean, Cam is just, when healthy, a more proven wide receiver threat for this team. You can never have too many playmakers. We didn't see the playmakers they do have make enough plays last week at Green Bay. And I think if you could add a Cameron Meredith into this offense for the next 2 years, it would really not only make Mitch Trubisky better, but you know, you would have less risk in terms of needing Taylor Gabriel to be a number 2 wide receiver, less risk in terms of needing Anthony Miller to accelerate his development, and less risk because you wouldn't need as much from Allen Robinson. You just wouldn't need as much from everyone else if you had a receiver like Cameron Meredith in the mix. And again, they don't need Cameron Meredith. We're talking about a little bit of a luxury here. And so at the end of the day, this isn't a move that will drastically affect the Bears season in any way. But when you have the opportunity to add a quality weapon for your young quarterback with Kevin White still on the field and making more money than Cameron Meredith would make. I mean, just think about that. When Kevin White comes off the books this summer,
it would be his Cameron Meredith's salary would just kind of take that slot. Like it would just be like the same thing. I mean, from a financial standpoint, it makes sense. From an on the field standpoint, it makes sense. I know there's an injury risk. I know it's not a big deal, but I just can't help but look back at it and still feel the same way that I did, even though Cameron Meredith hasn't played. I mean, as the season goes on, if Meredith misses the whole year or whatever, then yes, the Bears will be proven right. But I'm not ready to say after 2 weeks of Meredith not playing that, you know, the Bears shouldn't have brought him back. Still a situation worth monitoring, but I still feel strongly that adding this player into this offense would have been a positive, would have been worth the money, and would have been worth the risk. But like I said, in theory, the Bears offense should still be fine. I think they're going to have a lot of success Monday night against the Seattle Seahawks. And if you're listening to this podcast afterwards, then yes, they had a lot of success on Monday night against the Seattle Seahawks, or maybe I sound like an idiot. But either way, we're still going to see a fun Bears offense. Even if Trubisky isn't as good as Patrick Mahomes is right now, there's going to be ups and downs with those two quarterbacks. And in this NFC North division, there's a lot of ups and downs already. There's some volatility in Green Bay and in Minnesota. Detroit doesn't look too good. There's a lot of reason for optimism, I think, for Chicago Bears fans. And going back through that conversation with Mark Schofield reminded me that we didn't have a lot of reason to say that last year. So don't take what we have with the Bears right now for granted. I think, again, it's not a bad time to be a Bears fan. I know on this podcast, I remain objective and analytical, covering the Chicago Bears team and helping to make us all better football consumers. And sometimes that can come off negative, but I promise you, I see the positive in Chicago. I hope you can see and hear that come through in my analysis here. And I hope you'll continue to keep it locked on Locked On Bears. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Leave us a nice review. And of course, use our fan voicemail and text line for the listeners here. It is 312-620-8590. Before, during, and after the Seattle Seahawks game on week 2, give me your thoughts, give me your reactions, give me your questions. We'll answer the best fan listener questions and responses and reactions on the podcast here. That's how you can join the conversation, and I hope you do. I think it adds something extra, and it helps see there are Bears fans around the world. You know, we've got listeners in Europe. We've got listeners in other continents. Of course, we're getting questions from people in Florida and North Carolina and Chicago. It's just a fun thing to be able to share this stage with you and give the Bears fans a voice. Again, it's 312-620-8590. I really do think, and maybe the people who have called in and texted in can attest to this, but I think being able to share your Bears opinion and kind of talk through some of these points over the podcast and dive deeper on what it is you, the listener, want to hear about, I think that's a great way to bear down.